The student demonstrators shall desist from all forms of their illegal protest against university regulations. Number two, a committee representing students, including leaders of the demonstration, faculty and administration, will immediately be set up to conduct discussions and hearing into all aspects of political behavior on campus and its control, and to make recommendations to the administration. Three, the arrested man will be booked but released on his own recognizance, and the university, which is the complainant, will not press charges. This is four. The duration of the suspension of the suspended students will be submitted within 1 week to the Student Conduct Committee of the Academic Senate, not to the administration. Five, activity may be continued by student organizations in accordance with existing university regulations.
The date was October 2nd, 1964. The voice was that of Mario Savio reading an agreement which had been negotiated between the University of California at Berkeley and several hundred of its students who had surrounded a police car and prevented police from removing from the campus a non-student arrested during a political demonstration. The agreement settled nothing, and 2 months later more than 800 students were arrested in Sproul Hall during a sit-in called in support of three demands: that the disciplinary charges filed against four students be dropped, that the university agree not to file charges against individuals or groups involved in any demonstrations up to that time, and that the administration grant previous demands for removal of the ban on certain kinds of political activity on campus, a ban which had led to the demonstrations in the first place. A few days later, on December 8, 1964, the Academic Senate of the University of California at Berkeley adopted, by a vote of 824-115, the following resolution.
1. That there shall be no university disciplinary measures against members or organizations of the university community for activities prior to December 8th connected with the current controversy over political speech and activity. 2. That the time, place, and manner of conducting political activity on the campus shall be subject to reasonable regulation to prevent interference with the normal functions of the university. That the regulations now in effect for this purpose shall remain in effect provisionally, pending a future report of the Committee on Academic Freedom concerning the minimal regulations necessary. Section 3. That the content of speech or advocacy should not be restricted by the university. Off-campus student political activities shall not be subject to university regulation. On-campus advocacy or organization of such activities shall be subject only to such limitations as may be imposed under Section 2. 4. That future disciplinary measures in the area of political activity shall be determined by a committee appointed by and responsible to the Berkeley Division of the Academic Senate.
That was the now famous December 8th resolution, to which reference will be made repeatedly in the remainder of this program. What it says is well known in the university community. What it means is a matter of dispute. For the last 3.5 months, tension has been building between the Berkeley administration and some of its students and student groups. Many issues have been involved, from the politics of the gubernatorial campaign through the amount of information the university must and should give out to the public about the membership of campus groups. But again and again, the dispute has returned to two issues that were also part of the free speech movement of 1964. First, the role which non-students may and should play in groups the administration recognizes as on-campus ones, that is, ones which have privileges on campuses, on the campus, not made available to the public at large. and second, the amount of authority the administration and the students have and should have over regulations governing student activities. On August 13th, the administration informed the Vietnam Day Committee that it was being suspended from the status of an on-campus group, and among the reasons were the number of non-students in the organization's leadership and the allegation that it had not properly informed the administration in advance about the appearance of non-student speakers. The suspension was ended in October when the group agreed to have only students among its leaders. In the interim, the administration had announced regulations banning any but students and university employees from being active members of campus groups. On October 11th, the administration announced that the Sproul Hall steps could not be used for a proposed conference on black power. Eventually, agreement was reached to hold the conference in the Greek Theater, and it was held without incident. On October 21st, the university ordered 600 to 800 Negro high school students to leave the campus, and charges were later brought against a university student alleged to have violated university regulations by not informing the administration that the high school students were involved in the Oakland school boycott. The disciplinary case, which arose then, and others which arose later, raised questions about the validity of the regulations under which persons were being disciplined. One of the cases was that of Mario Savio, who deliberately violated the regulation against non-students passing out literature on campus and was thereupon denied readmission to the university. In all the cases, it was ruled that the regulations could not be challenged in the bodies established to hear appeals from rulings handed down under those regulations. At the same time that this issue was developing, another developed from the expectation among students that the administration was about to prohibit further use of the Sproul Hall steps for political rallies. It was during the first rally in protest against this expected ban that Mr. Savio violated the regulation on passing out literature. On the 22nd of November, some of the heat seemed to be taken out of the issue over the Sproul Hall steps, when the administration announced that no changes in regulations would be made until at least the end of the current quarter, which ends December 17th.
At noon on November 30th, 1966, a Navy recruiting table was set up in the lower level of the Student Union building on the Berkeley campus. Protest reaction came swiftly. A table presenting a pacifist view was set up nearby. A picket line formed. University officials first banned the table and then the protest, and subsequently, as the later discussion makes clear, made some adjustments from this position. But the events had been set in motion. Groups of students and others gathered in and around the student union. Ultimately, some of these people went into the building and a sit-in, or rather two sit-ins, developed. The first, and the smaller of the two, took place in a ground floor corridor just outside the entrance to the university bookstore. The second was located on the lobby floor of the building. Word came from the administration by Vice Chancellor William Boyd. He announced that the smaller group, the group that was on the ground floor, was disrupting the function of the building and was therefore an illegal assembly. The demonstrators gathered there began to debate the issue of possible arrest, as well as the issues which first brought them into the building. Here, in montage form, are some of the high points of that discussion.
I want to do something which they must respond to, at least which they, you know, which there's a higher likelihood they will respond to. You know, before I've waited out so many long hours without any food, etc., very likely, or certainly without any rest. All right, That's why I would suggest staying here. All right. We've had repeatedly at this university the difficulty of attending hearings where the question issue in the hearing is whether you performed a certain act, something you're glad to stipulate to. It may be that if we set a time limit and decide to leave, and this is likely, the university will not have granted our demand not to have discipline up to that time, that's likely. There will be discipline subsequently, and we should, it seems to me, have set upon a way to protect ourselves against that. And a very good way of protecting ourselves against that is by refusing to participate in the hearing which will determine whether or not we've done what we're all proud of having done. Now, if a few hundred of us do that, then they will be put, as I said before, in the predicament of choosing between disciplining us without a hearing or not disciplining us, you know, assuming that they decide to prefer, what disciplinary charges. So I'd like to get back to I'd like to maybe add something to the motion that I made before. For discussion. I move that we stay here unless it is declared that also, in the opinion of the chancellor or one of the police, is equally unlawful or in, you know, whatever terms they choose to use, assembly upstairs. Now we stay here, that we set a time limit on our staying here, that the time limit be sometime after the closing hour of this building. Now that could be in a couple of days, I haven't decided, but certainly not less than after the closing hour of this building, or until they meet our demands, whichever comes first. That we likewise circulate this complicity statement, that the complicity statement binds us not to take part in hearings unless those canons of due process which I enumerated before are met.
Second the motion.
This demonstration did not start to prove our abstract right to have demonstrations. And it started because the Navy was here, because they were recruiting and because you can get drafted into the Navy. And they were using campus facilities for that. Now, I think we have to remember something. We didn't originally intend to stop their functioning. We intended to picket them and allow them to function. Because our picketing wasn't allowed, we, in effect, stopped them from functioning. They didn't give out a single leaflet. They came here and did nothing. They were isolated. They didn't even get near their fraternity friends. So that is a victory. Now, and another victory that was won was, it was agreed that if we wanted to, we could have brought the table back. Of course, that was tied to other things. So let's not think of, if we decide to leave, that we haven't scored anything, that we haven't accomplished anything. We've accomplished a lot here today. I don't see what would be accomplished, how would it benefit us specifically by being arrested. No one has really spelled that out. How the specific act of arrest can aid us in building, one, an anti-war movement, and two, a movement to ensure our rights on this campus. But I think we've had a long demonstration here. I think we should set a certain amount of hours in which we will continue to remain and then leave on our own time and at the time that we set. And then I think none of us will be in jail. We'll be a hell of a lot freer to be operating tomorrow. We won't be hung up about raising bail money. We won't be diverted. And we'll be able to be on the campus again tomorrow. If these guys are here tomorrow, we can be back here tomorrow with more people, with more attention.
The Navy has left. And really, you know, the administration could let us sit here for a week. And in a week, we block nothing. If they want to use the SUC's door, they can use the other doors. Upstairs, if we go upstairs now, you know, we're right in the center of the ASUC.
If we leave now, you just wait and see how fast they bring the cops the next time. My God.
That the whole problem of arrest was brought up by Boyd himself. He was trying to call a tune, and he gave us 10 minutes. But 10 minutes elapsed hours ago. He's already backed down on that issue. If we were to take the same tactic and say, we'll stay here until he arrests us, you know, in other words, push him into the corner, all you're doing is showing your own personal commitment rather than any lack of commitment on his part.
Go upstairs and find out what has happened. We've had all sorts of reports coming in, sort of disjointed. Nobody really knows.
How did it get back?
Somebody just went upstairs about 10 minutes ago to tell them what was going on down here because they didn't know, and I assumed it would be right back.
How about bringing the phone number up and everybody letting them call that?
I don't think that we should have arrests, but I don't think we should back down under the threat of arrests. Seems to me, if I understand the discussion as it's gone, people... No, I can't come there now because I'm speaking. Well, perhaps you can come over here.
No!
I don't think so.
Excuse me?
here. That will take you up and bring you back down.
Okay. No. Who are you?
Just McGrew. Jim Lemon, Dean of Men.
I mean, what?
Jim Lemon, Dean of Men. How he's assistant.
Another problem. That problem is that there's no communication from here to there. What's resulting in it is that stories are going on up there, which I'm sure are all kinds of exaggerations. People are speaking in terms of actions, which, from what I gather, this discussion going on now does not warrant the actions going on up there. Not saying I agree or disagree.
What's happening?
What's happening is that there's a very slow panic paranoia setting in up there.
What are they talking about?
There are talk, like some people, and I can't verify all of this. Some people have been talking about policemen running all over the place. We know there's policemen here. We know there's plainclothesmen there. We don't know there's, 8 million policemen running out there. Some people think so. You ask them where? Well, I heard. Well, the point is, even after you try and get a verification of the story, which may or may not be correct, the thought is already implanted. It's a very simple psychology.
We don't know either.
Right, we don't know. But the point is, the kind of psychology that's going on up there may damage rather than help the efforts going on down here. And that is why I would ask someone, Mario, anyone who's been in this discussion for a couple hours, to go up there and tell them what's been going on out there and stop it going from astray.
Before you go up, someone get the phone number down here. Have somebody up there call this phone down here and keep the line open so we can communicate all the time.
I said once before, I'll say it again. Hey,
quiet.
Hey.
The people up there.
Hey.
Inside. Not
I said I'd be glad to take Mario upstairs and make sure he comes back down as soon as he talks. It's not going to be a long talk. It'll be the understanding. Fair enough?
Is it possible to put on the floor to be considered before the motions are suggested to be considered before quickly the following question? That I and one person who's taken a different position go upstairs and briefly address the people upstairs. That's the motion.
Second.
And it should be someone else also who has taken at least a somewhat different position on these questions.
The suggested speakers are Mario and Hal. All in favor, please raise your hand. Opposed? Okay, it passes.
About 3-1.
The sit-in areas were one above the other. Connecting them was a staircase. By this time, shortly after 5 p.m., police had blocked off the staircase and thus separated the two demonstrations. It was through this police line that Dean Lemon agreed to conduct Mario Savio and Hal Jacobs. Halfway up the stairs, the group composed of student, non-student, dean, and the press met the police. There was the following exchange.
Excuse me, huh? But who are you?
Who are you, John? I'm sorry.
Pardon? I'm the
film
director.
He wants to
speak
right here. Hal, not to speak right from here.
Well, let's just see what happens here. You know, it's nice to know who these orders were.
DMA?
Well, no, I mean, I want this gentleman to say whether or not we'll be able to come back. This person, anyway.
Thank you, Mario.
Well,
Freudian slip.
What has he said? Yes.
I don't know.
He won't say who he is. Well, I don't want to have to fight him.
They won't let him turn up.
This person won't let us come back down if we go up.
Who is he?
Someone from the police, I believe, but he won't identify himself. Let's not get so close that they can pull us on a
bike. If they pull us, then you know. Screw them.
No. I'm this person here.
You talk to him.
Yes.
We talk to him. You talk to him. Please. I will identify both of you back down.
And they will allow us
and
to come through?
They will allow you down. That's correct if I identify. Fair enough.
All right.
I'll stand by right here.
The group downstairs, by a strong vote but not a unanimous vote, authorized two of us who have taken different positions with regard to what we should do next to come up here and talk to this group, myself and Hal, who will speak next. We've been discussing for some time downstairs. Okay, I'll try. We've been discussing for some time downstairs whether or not we should do one of four things, not all of which are incompatible one with another. First, let me, for those who don't know, briefly recap how it began, very, very briefly. Earlier today, there was a Navy recruiting table downstairs. It was there, that's a non-student, non-university organization, and it was there because of a university policy of maintaining a continuing traditional special relationship with agencies of the government. People began a protest there. The protest was a table, against the things the Navy was doing, set up there likewise. How, were there any students at the table?
I don't know.
Oh, there were no?
I thought there was one non-student.
Oh, there was one, but there were other students. Right? I mean, there were people students. Yeah, there were both students and non-students present at the table. The regulations with regard to tables outside is that a non-student may be present, provided a student is also. So, insofar as that area might have been considered analogous to the areas outside, it was not violating regulations which would apply to tables outside. Its position, where the table was not compatible with current campus policies with regard to these matters. The sense of the protest was that if this, off-campus political organization, now I know putting it that way is contentious, but that was the feeling of the people who began the protest. If this off-campus political organization can have this table here recruiting, we should be able, likewise, to have a counter table. There was subsequently also a picket of the Navy table. The table was removed by the police. Yeah, no, not the Navy table. Right? Yeah. The conscientious objection table was removed by the police, and the picketing was stopped, likewise, by the police. There then began the current protest. In time, the presence of the protest moved them to reconsider that. But along the way, the vice chancellor said, Boyd, we'd like to, we'll discuss this with you and have negotiations concerning it with people who have been leading this protest. However, we will not have them as long as the protesters remain. But we've had lots of experience with that. And in the past, people hadn't had the opportunity, in the past, it's proven the case that we negotiate successfully from positions of power only. So the position was adopted. The Navy table leaves, or ours comes back, and not until that happens will we leave. Then along the way, the chancellor said, well, I'm sorry, I have to ask you to leave. If you don't leave, I will have to declare this assembly unlawful. One of the problems we've had since 2 years ago is that the administration is always trying to usurp the prerogatives of the courts and the police. He was going to declare the assembly unlawful. And after a while, he said, in 10 minutes. Well, now that didn't give us enough time to discuss the matter. And then we were very, very worried about something else. And I say, and then, though I'm not clear on the chronology. We were worried, let me say, about something else. Namely, that even if they agreed to giving us the table, now they weren't going to take the Navy table away, but even if they agreed to giving us the table, that still there might subsequently be university discipline for the people who had organized or participated in the demonstration. That would make it all the harder next time when the next fight with them comes up, as inevitably it will, to launch a protest. Because if every time, The people who take the initiative and make the greatest initial risk are going to be cut off and nobody's going to defend them. After a while, you're going to run out of those people. And this is an experience we had before. In addition, a fight developed. Willie Brand was slugged by someone standing around the table. He was arrested, Brand. He has been brought, as I understand this is, I wasn't there, this isn't firsthand, I believe it's true, that he was brought to the city jail and charged with battery.
He's out now, Mario.
He's out now on bail?
No, on bail.
Oh, all right, then you know that he's out now on bail. We therefore attach to our demands the following. That the university declare, through Vice Chancellor Boyd, that it would not prefer charges against Brand. Not now, not ever, for this act. If he did something else tomorrow, it's another question. You know, did something, if he's hit again tomorrow. Right? No, but that the university would not prefer charges against Brand for this act. That for two reasons. One, if in the court, charges have been preferred by the person who hit him, by the way. If in the courts it comes up, this question, then it can be argued, after all, the institution administering, you know, the administration of the institution decided not to prefer charges. That's a good, you know, that in itself is, you know, a good partial defense. But likewise, we wanted to make sure they wouldn't prefer charges in the future. The administration might decide subsequently, a month from now, when we're weak, perhaps, to prefer charges. We wanted to make sure that they would not do that. And we pointed out to Boyd there was plenty of precedent. During the free speech movement on October 2nd, Clark Kerr signed an agreement with leaders of that demonstration, part of which was that the university would not prefer charges against the then-arrested man, Jack Weinberg, who was not even a student. Brand is a student. So there was the precedent. All right, so those were the things. One, that they permit us to put the table back, and included in that, they agreed to let us have two people picketing. All right? They agreed to that and the table, finally. They said it was something you could have had all along, although in fact they'd backed down because they'd originally taken it away and stopped the picketing. But they agreed to that. They did back down to that extent. But two, we added, as I said before, that they not prefer charges against Brand, number one, and number two, that the administration, through Boyd, declared that the university would not prefer charges against anyone involved in organizing or participating in this demonstration, either charges outside in the courts or in university hearings. Those were the demands. Those last two things were not agreed to. Boyd would not agree to those things. Arlie Williams came down, he's dean of students, and he said the following. I would stake my reputation on this. If you leave, I will be as if I knew no one here. In other words, he would not prefer charges. And we all, I believed all that he said. I've known him for a long time, and I think that he, in fact, you know, would not make such a statement unless he meant it. Things, of course, that Boyd could prefer charges, or, you know, any one of a number of other people could prefer charges, and Williams had only bound himself, so that was not acceptable to us. We wanted the person presently in charge, Hines being presently away, we were told by Boyd, so Boyd or Vice Chancellor, Executive Vice Chancellor Chite, or the two together, who are the people presently in charge to make that commitment for the university. Boyd, who's the only person of that sort who came, would not. All right, so we remain. Now comes the questions which are dividing us. One, should we come up here? Two, should we circulate a complicity petition similar to the declaration of intent which the CCO has circulated on campus, saying that if disciplinary hearings do come out of this, you know, despite our intent.
Mario, a busload of cops have just arrived in the parking lot downstairs.
Well,
thanks.
All right. You know, that if discipline does occur, that no one will attend the university hearing with regard to that discipline, unless the canons of due process the CCO has already declared in favor of, you know, buying that hearing. I read them. And perhaps after Hal is done speaking, perhaps one of us can read them to this group here. They're fairly detailed, and they're quite reasonable, and the administration has already declared against them, I think, in all but maybe one case. All right. So, do we come up here? Do we circulate such a petition, which is different from the CCO petition only in that it referred to this demonstration rather than just to the steps? Third, should we stay indefinitely, which there seems almost no sentiment for, you know, assuming that they don't meet our demands, or should we set a time limit ourselves as to when we will leave so that we're not leaving, you know, at their behest, we're not leaving under their pressure, but rather when we decide? It seems that... I'm sorry. It seems that there's a good deal of sentiment for that, but disagreement as to when we should leave, whether it should be sometime before midnight or sometime after. All right. And the reason is because that's when the building closes. All right. Now, here's where there's the most disagreement. I favor our staying until sometime after midnight, which we set ourselves. It could even be a short while after midnight, let's say a quarter of an hour. And the reason that I presented was the following. We would like, you know, I would like to see us establish our right to hold that marathon sit-in, not to move under pressure or whatever, you know, until our demands are met. On the other hand, I prefer not to hold the marathon sit-in in fact. Well, midnight marks the only qualitative change, you know, in time. There's nothing that we can do after a quarter after midnight, you know. There's nothing which we can do by being here legally after, let's say, a quarter after midnight, you know, that we can't do during the quarter of an hour from midnight until a quarter after. Once the building is closed legally, then if we decide to leave, and they very likely will let us, they would look silly, as a matter of fact, in court if they didn't. Once the building is closed, then there is no subsequent period, there's no subsequent time when we further demonstrate our ability, should we so choose, to stay here until our demands are met. Once the building is closed, it can only open again. And then, you know, the thing is okay again. Then it can close again. But that's the only sort of thing which can happen which changes the situation legally. And so if we want to set a time so that we not be leaving under, you know, pressure, so that we set our own time, but so likewise that we establish the right to continue the protest until our demands are met without having to exhaust ourselves beyond, you know, recognition, that's why I urge that sometime after midnight, and a short period of time is certainly adequate, be the time when we leave the building. The place where we agree, however, is that we ought not leave under direct threat of arrest. Earlier, the Chancellor said 10 minutes and I will declare it an unlawful assembly. Well, that 10 minutes elapsed hours ago. They back down again. And it seems to us, that, you know, it seems to people downstairs that if they should say, you're going to be arrested now, we should stay. You know, because we don't want them to be able to use that threat which they can always again use. But the question at issue, as I say, is between setting our own time before midnight or after. So.
How many people are downstairs
now? Oh, downstairs, there are certainly fewer than are here. Good God. I didn't deal with the question of, did I deal with the question of coming up here? The reason that many people downstairs do not favor coming up here is not that they don't want to join the people up here. This is, much larger and so on and cooler, etc. For the following reason, we're being coerced. They have declared that area one of unlawful assembly, and this, they have not declared an area of unlawful assembly. It may just as well be. It may be that neither area is. I don't know. But that one they have so declared. That place isn't any more crowded than this. I think maybe less crowded, as a matter of fact. In other words, again, it's the question, should we terminate or reorganize our protest because of their demands? People downstairs felt no. And likewise, the following. The way that bureaucracies deal with protest is, wherever possible, to ignore it. While up here with the doors open, they can say, well, these people are just sitting down having a coffee clutch or something, you know, until the doors close. Down there, because Boyd perhaps indiscreetly said he felt it was an unlawful assembly, they're now in a position where they can't easily ignore that. And the people downstairs felt we ought not to give in to the threat.
Now look, in the next few minutes probably, or maybe...
In the next few minutes, a lot of things might happen, like the police might actually show themselves or something like that. And the point is that, you know, let's just not get panicky and let's just continue the discussion and think about what we're talking about right now. Okay. I'll do the best I can. There is no disagreement at all with Mario's description of what happened this afternoon. That's not an issue. Now, what the differences amount to relate to what should be done right now in face of the possibility of arrests, given the fact that a small number, relatively speaking, compared to the number of people up here, a small number of people are downstairs. Now, let me go through the four or five points that Mario mentioned and point out where I think there's no disagreement. And just focus on our points of disagreement. Mario suggested that there should be complicity statements signed about the hearing. No disagreement about that. I think everybody's in favor of having those complicity statements. And that would be in accord with the type of demands that CCO has put forward before. I mean, basically, the complicity statement is almost the same as the one that CCO handed out. There's no disagreement about the complicity statement with regard to hearings. So that's not what's at issue. What's at issue really amounts to tying the other three things Mario spoke about together. The question of, should the people downstairs come up here? That's one. Should they establish, to use Mario's words, their right to hold a marathon sit-in by staying after 12? That's two. And of course, it's related to the first, the one about whether they should come up here, because eventually they will probably come up here. The third question, which is related to the first two, is, ought people to leave under the pressure of arrest? All right, those three questions are related in my mind. And this is the way I'd like to discuss it. I'd like to make a distinction between acting politically and acting morally. Now, in one sense, I agree with Mario. The administration should not have the right to push students around anywhere on campus, and in particular, in their own student union. See, I mean, this is our building, supposedly. We even paid for it. That's clearly true. Now, but it's also true that the university shouldn't have the right to do lots of things they do. So, for me, at any rate, the question is, what is the best political thing to do, not moral thing to do, necessarily, and they may not necessarily be in conflict. What is the best political thing to do in order to win this fight? Now, what is the fight about? At this specifically, right now, what is the protest about? People are sitting downstairs in order to defend the people who the administration says they are thinking of disciplining for calling the protest today.
Hello, guys. Mario, they're being arrested.
The time is 20 minutes of 6. Question is, are the people downstairs being arrested? The debate upstairs continues.
Look, to some extent, the whole question is becoming more and more moot, because the question that was involved was, if there were going to be arrests, one, where would the best place be? I was arguing the best place would be up here where the most people are. That's the first thing. Second question involved was, if we can avoid arrests, should we? I was arguing that if we can avoid it, we should, because I didn't think it would help us politically. That is, we could make our points in other ways. Apparently, it looks like there's going to be arrests momentarily, so right now, I'm going to go back where I was before.
And I believe that people should stay here.
Let's push through that crowd of cops right
now. Tell everybody. Tell
everybody outside. Raise your hands.
Oh, 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 oh. outlaws opposed to it!
Okay. The Russian police up the stairs. There's the Russian police up the stairs. We're moving now toward the... The police are pushing up the stairs here in the Student Union building. Both plain clothes and blue uniform police, they're pushing it back. Alameda County. There's a push-up line here by Alameda uniform policemen with billy clubs here. They're upstairs blocking the staircase here. They're right at the police barricade line. They are armed with it. They're letting people in. Two to one. The police are pushing the people down onto the ground. Professor Scott is being pushed. Professor Scott, Professor Scott is being pushed down on top of the students.
The people here have not decided to stay and be arrested. And if those police know that, maybe they won't attack these. The people sitting here have not decided to be arrested, have not even decided to stay. You don't know that. If you give them a chance to deliberate further, for all we know, they might decide to leave. But would you give them a chance to deliberate? Mario. The people here have not determined to stay yet. They may, but they haven't yet so determined.
You want to go back downstairs?
Captain. Captain Huchins, H-O-U-C-H-I-N-S, of the Alameda Sheriff's Department, is the one who wanted to know whether Mario would go downstairs. The time now is 6:13.
Did you understand what I just said?
He shook his head, no. That is the captain.
What the demonstrators had interpreted as a move by the Alameda County Sheriff's deputies to begin mass arrests against the students sitting in the lobby area, an area not declared unlawful for this assembly, turned out to be a beefing up of the police line on the steps and moving to the top of the staircase in order to keep the two groups apart. Arrests were going on downstairs, but they were not the expected mass arrest of all the demonstrators. Only a handful who were among the non-students in the demonstration were arrested, and these by warrants. After the arrests, the groups did indeed merge on the lobby floor. Some went outside to attempt to stop the departure of the sheriff's bus with the arrested demonstrators. They formed a cordon 4 deep across Bancroft Way. A wedge of police broke through the line, and the sheriff's van got underway. Inside the lobby of the Student Union, the debate continued, but now new issues were introduced, and many others became academic.
I was here 2 years ago, during the FSM, and I had this incredible feeling of deja vu, you know? I've been here before, except this time, everything has suddenly become compressed into a matter of relative, almost 1 day. Don't let them victimize our leaders. That all of us are in this together. That was the decision that around 150 or 200 of us made downstairs, that all of us were going to be arrested. The university one-upped us. They just arrested a handful of leaders, and all the police walked out. We now have to find some other sort of way, aside from just sitting downstairs, which they have said they will ignore, to defend our leaders, to make sure that they do not chop off the people leading this struggle. And the most effective way is through a student strike, through everybody in this room participating in it and saying, no, you can't get away with that.
I think we've got to have this strike, and I think we've got to make it clear to the entire campus and to the outside community why it is we're going on strike. Because this is not the result of just a single incident. This is the result of a whole series of incidents and a trend in this university that's got to be stopped. and it's got to be stopped pretty damn soon. I think we've got to have a few demands. And I think the first demand is to get the cops off the campus. And this, you know, this doesn't just mean the cops who came on today for this special purpose. It means Dean Sickeneater, too, and the other cops and plainclothesmen that are here every day. Now, the second demand, and this is the chief thing, is we want an end to this chipping away at our political rights, which hasn't even been chipping away recently. It's been carving it up in large blocks. There's been a whole series of incidents, you know, one set of regulations after another, each one more oppressive than the ones before. Not that the students indicated any satisfaction with the ones before that. There was the attempt to discipline me over my letter, which they had to back down on because we opposed it. We used the force, you know, the force of the student body. And that's why they backed down on that. That's because they changed their minds. There was Chancellor Hines' famous little speech on coercion to the Academic Senate. Well, it may have taken some people in at that time, but I don't think we're taking it any longer about what Chancellor Hines means by an end to coercion. You know, what he really means, I think, is an end to political rights. He'll supply all the coercion that he needs. Okay, now I think these should be the main issues and the main demands that we make.
By now, some 3,000 people were densely packed into the lobby area. An offer came to move to Wheeler Auditorium to meet with representatives of the faculty and the administration. The immediate reaction was to reject the offer, but some speakers addressed themselves to this question.
There are many of us who are deeply disturbed by the events of today. There are many of us in the faculty who are deeply disturbed by the events of today. We lived through comparable events a couple of years ago, and we hope they would never happen again on this campus. We also feel that there should now be an open forum where the administration may speak. There are representatives of the administration who want to speak to you. There are faculty members here who want to speak to you, and this is an impossible place for an open forum. Therefore, Pauli Ballroom is okay. But Wheeler Hall is better. It's open. It will be kept open all night.
Can we please conduct this meeting in a somewhat democratic fashion and allow each speaker to speak unimpeded?
My appeal to you then is that you move to a place where faculty and administration can be heard as well as the students, and that whatever actions you move towards with full understanding of the consequences of what you are doing. I might point out, because many students do not understand this, that the reason the faculty supported the students overwhelmingly 2 years ago was the issue was civil rights. The tables, which would have been stopped if the administration had been followed, were the tables of Core and SNCC. The faculty did not rally to free speech in any abstract way. The faculty rallied to the fact that this was a time when the civil rights movement was recruiting on the Berkeley campus, getting money on the Berkeley campus, and our students were vigorously involved in civil rights. This the faculty supported. And I ask now that you move to some place where a reasonable forum can be held.
This is Robert Mundy again. I can't even get on the table. I talked to Dean Williams and Vice Chancellor Blaze about 10 minutes ago as they were going into the ASUC meeting. He asked me if I thought it would be wise if they opened up Pauli Ballroom. And I said, well, I think a lot of people would like to sit there, but who would chair the meeting? And he said, the administration. I said, no. As far as, wait,
He agreed with me, and so did Blaze, that they, if they can open up Pauley Ballroom, the students will chair the meeting.
The next speaker will be Hal Draper.
Now, I want to say a word about the last piece of history that we just heard by Professor Washburn about the reaction of the faculty 2 years ago, because it's certainly relevant to us today in view of the fact that we want to stimulate and to encourage action by the faculty on behalf of the students, and the question is, how do you do it? Now, I'm afraid that Professor Washburn was not right when he said that the faculty 2 years ago responded to the civil rights issue. I don't mean they weren't for civil rights, but that was not the issue that they responded to. That was in September, when the administration clamped down on the tables that were working for civil rights. The faculty did nothing. They argued through October, and the faculty did nothing. They argued and hassled through November, and the faculty did nothing. And it was not until the students sat in Sproul Hall and in the midst of the strike that the faculty finally rose up on their hind legs and on December 8th voted a motion in support of the students right in the midst of the strike. That was 3 months after the civil rights issue had been raised. And what they were responding to was the fact, was it not, that the campus had been just inundated by police. This is the next time that that has happened. The faculty consists all of very sincere men who are all for civil liberties and academic freedom. I think that can be taken as a fact. But you should also take as a fact this, and that is that they never do anything about it until you move. Yeah. Moves by the administration or faculty members, with the best of intentions always, to move you out of the level at which you've gotten into right now, to quiet things down for a while so you can go home, to smooth things over, all of these were tried 2 years ago too. They have a long history. I'm, of course, merely discussing this historically.
The lobby was crowded, hot, and uncomfortable, and the prospect of moving to Pauley Auditorium in the Student Union Building to continue their own meeting was a more welcome alternative to the demonstrators than to become a participant with other groups at Wheeler Auditorium. The demonstrators moved swiftly to a decision to move to the auditorium on the second floor. This was the first clear-cut decision before several calls had been made for a vote to strike, and each had been clearly rejected. The demonstrators were not yet ready to move to a decision on the issue of the strike. Other groups had. At meetings which broke up earlier, the ASUC Senate had voted 9-8 in favor of a strike. A meeting of members of the Graduate Coordinating Council moved to a similar decision. The executive committee of the local of the Federation of Teachers, which included graduate student employees of the university, had voted to call a meeting of their membership to urge a strike. But inside the student union, where the mass meeting was going on, the debate continued. In Pauley Ballroom, the determination began to form. At first, the debate continued as it had downstairs. But there was a new element added. Executive Vice Chancellor Earl Chite appeared and spoke, as did Vice Chancellor Boyd. In the next portion of this program, we present in full several of the speeches. The talks by Suzanne Savio and Bob Monday are abbreviated. The first voices you will hear will be those of Professor Dundee of the University faculty, student demonstrator Joel Geyer, and Earl Chite.